It's time for a solid hour of Tea Party Power. And now, here's Janine Garofalo's favorite tea-bagging redneck, Mark Gillar.
Welcome to the Tea Party Power Hour. I am your host, Mark Gillar. Thank you for joining us for what promises to be one of our most memorable shows ever. My guest today has been a world-famous comedian for nearly five decades. He writes columns, authors books. He's a movie actor, a Broadway entertainer. He's even had his own radio and television shows. He's won Tonys and Tellys and Emmys and Aces. He's even done a one-man command performance for the Queen of England. And as if all this weren't enough, he's now conquering new mediums. He blogs, he vlogs, and is making independent films with his lovely wife, Jill, the most recent of which I believe is entitled Jackie Goldberg, Private Dick. I'm talking, of course, about the world-famous Mr. Jackie Mason. Jackie, welcome to the show.
I had such a good time listening to the introduction, I forgot what I do for a living. I never knew I was such a big hit. Listening to my own career, I was so impressed with myself, I wanted to quit and go look for a job.
I had a rim shot uploaded just for you today, so we can we can use that after each one of your jokes. Now, one of the things I've seen you all over YouTube, all over television, talking about your support of the Tea Party. Do you think the Tea Party is going to be capable of having the same type of impact in 2012 that it had in 2010?
I have no doubt about it, because if Obama is still the president, I don't think he's, unless Obama changes completely and goes upside down and disagrees with what you think he has done so far, unless he disagrees with himself and moves over to the opposite side, he'll be just as good a he'll be just as necessary a target, and he'll be just as vulnerable, and we'll be just as anxious to attack him as we were before, because the truth of the matter is his policies have a detriment not only to the country, they're desperately terrible for the world, because everything he's doing is counterproductive and self-defeating. We don't need a president who came. See, if he was hired to destroy the economy of this country, he couldn't be doing a better job. You would think he's on the payroll. The Al-Qaeda hasn't done us half as much harm as he has. Unfortunately, they're more violent. He hasn't killed anybody, but people are practically starving. They might not be dying from violence, but they're passing away from starvation pretty soon.
So you don't buy the fact that we're in the middle of a robust economic recovery?
This robust economic recovery is being announced every 2 weeks. Every 2 weeks they hear that the economy is about to recover. If it's about to recover every 2 weeks, how come it's still recovering 2.5 years later? If a guy was sick and they told you, well, he's about to recover, things are better than ever. And then the next week, they make the same announcement. Look at this. This time he's really getting better. Then a month later, well, the recovery that we announced before is even better now. How many times could you recover if you already recovered? Either you didn't recover in the first place, otherwise you still wouldn't be recovering 1.5 years later. And just now they announced the economic recovery about 2 weeks ago, and only last night there was the biggest slump in the job opportunities, the job market, the highest unemployment figures, the worst in the housing, worst in retail sales. All of a sudden, all the numbers were exactly in reverse that were announced for the last 2.5 years. For 2.5 years, it's getting better, only to find out that 2.5 years later, it's worse than ever. How did it get so much worse after repeating so many times how it's getting better? How many times could you keep getting better and still get worse? I never heard of it.
I have to admit, I have friends on the left who keep trying to tell me about all the jobs that Barack Obama has created, but the unemployment rate is still higher now than when he took office. So I don't know how you create jobs, but...
When he came into office, it was 6.7% unemployment. About 1.5 million people unemployed. Then it went up to 9%, then it went up to 9.2, 9.3, 9.4, and now 2.5 years later, it's 8.8. And the reason it's 8.8 is because at least 18 million people stopped even looking for a job because they saw for 2.5 years you couldn't find a job. If you're going from one company to the other, either day after day for 2 years and can't find a job, don't you think you'll get nauseous after a while and maybe take a rest? So So we're talking about the people who are resting, they're not counting. They don't count the people who are resting because they're so nauseous from looking for a job that they got no strength to even look for a job anymore.
And it doesn't count the underemployed either. If you were a nuclear physicist and now you work at McDonald's, right, you're employed.
And he created a stimulus program which was nothing but bridges and roads and tunnels that absolutely went nowhere. Businesses were closing, but the tunnels and the bridges were getting bigger and longer. So if you have a shovel, you had a job. But what was the guy doing for a living? Who was a singer, a dancer, a flyer, an actor, a teacher? Nobody else was working except people with a shovel, who were building a road and a tunnel that was going nowhere because the roads and the tunnels and the bridges didn't have exits because they had no place to go because the businesses were closing. So we had no business but a lot of bridges and roads and tunnels with no place to go.
And that's not progress? Okay.
And these are the only people working. You know, when they captured the Jews in Russia, when they wanted to really mistreat them and pulverize them, and give them the worst possible treatment they could. They gave them shovels, and they told them to keep digging ditches. At that time, it was called a gulag. Now, the same thing is called a stimulus package.
That's the recovery, shovel-ready jobs. Although he later came out and said there's no such thing as a shovel-ready job.
I hate to tell you what he was really shoveling, because I'm trying to keep the show on a high level.
I appreciate that very much. Although unlike Ed Sullivan, I'm not going to ban you from the show. I promise.
Oh,
now, did you and Ed ever make your peace?
Yes, we did make up. He bumped into me once at an airport about 10 years later, after the incident, and he started apologizing profusely to me, saying that he wanted to apologize many times, but he used the example of a husband and wife who have a fight, and both people are too proud to apologize, and he felt very uncomfortable even trying to apologize to me, and he never did. And he said it with a very touching, practically a tear in his eye. I could see how moved and touched he was for the chance to talk to me, because he knew he was wrong all that time and misunderstood me and misrepresented me. And nevertheless, it ruined my career for 15 years. But I never held a grudge against him, because it was a misunderstanding that I know came from sincere, legitimate feelings.
I saw the clip. I still can't figure out what you did wrong. I don't see anything wrong with that. I saw the clip. So.
Well, he was so nervous because the president was about to go on the air. He was so nervous, and he was making gestures at me to tell me I have 2 minutes left. But the gestures were diverting the audience, and suddenly the laugh stopped because they were too busy watching him making gestures. So I was losing the audience because, you know, when a person is standing right next to you, turning fingers upside down, you're wondering what's going on and you forget to listen. You can't concentrate on the guy performing. You're wondering what the other guy is doing there.
That's right.
So it divided the audience and it ruined my laugh. So I started to make fun of his finger gestures, and he thought that I gave him a vulgar finger gesture. At that time, I was a rabbi only a year earlier, and I didn't even know what that vulgar finger gesture meant that he was infuriated about. I didn't even know what it meant. I had never heard of it, and I had no idea what it represented. And I didn't know what he was mad about. But he was furious, and he announced 10 seconds later that he canceled my contract for the next 8 shows. And all of a sudden, it gave me an image of an undependable, sick person who doesn't belong on television, who could do a vulgar thing in public. And it created a totally destructive image for me, and it ruined my career, because after that, nobody would hire me on television. For years and years.
I'm aware of the history, and I just have to say you were very unfairly treated, and it speaks volumes about your character that you haven't held a grudge against Ed Sullivan for that.
Right.
It speaks volumes about your character.
Because I knew he believed it. He thought that's what he saw. And in his terminology, in his language, and from his background, he was ready to believe it was a filthy gesture, and he believed it. I can't blame him for what he believed and what he was outraged about, because he was furious that a man like me, that he felt he gave so much of an opportunity for to become a star. He basically made me a star and destroyed my stardom. It's the same guy who did both.
And I'm glad, very glad, that you had that chance to reconcile at the airport and that he finally did what was right by apologizing, even if he had, assassinated your character. And speaking of character assassination, one of the things I've noticed is that anybody that says anything good about the Tea Party is going to be accused of racism or some other thing. Donald Trump says good things about the Tea Party. He's called a racist. You've said good things about the Tea Party. You're called a racist. What's it like to have someone make that accusation?
That's the last refuge of the so-called liberals. A liberal is supposed to be a guy who's tolerant. They always fought McCarthyism, and they were the victims of McCarthyism, who attacked them and abused them about being a communist when nobody was even involved or connected with it. And they suffered from that kind of vicious attack, unfounded, baseless attacks and abuse that destroyed careers and destroyed lives all over America, and that was known as McCarthyism. Now, they're trying to do the same thing in reverse. They suffered from it themselves, and they were outraged by it, and they thank God they overcame it. And they said that was the saddest chapter in American history, the existence of McCarthyism. And here they're trying to do it to everybody else. This is the last refuge of the liberals and the leftists. As soon as they're in trouble, and Barack Obama has been in trouble a lot because his unpopularity has been growing every day, and he went from a 70% approval rating down to 45%. Or 43, and sometimes 42. And as every time his popularity suffers, the only thing they could think of is if you're against his health care program, it's because you're a racist. It doesn't enter their mind that maybe you're trying to live longer, or maybe you want to actually be healthy. But you want to be healthy, or you think this thing might ruin your health and cost you 10 times as much money and make it impossible to even see a doctor. That can't be the reason. There's no such thing as a legitimate reason not to like Barack Obama. When they called Bush filthy, vulgar, the most disgusting names in the world, nobody ever said that they were racist. Imagine if you called them racist. If Barack Obama said this about Bush, when he called them those vulgar, disgusting names, the right never called the left or Barack Obama or the liberals any of the kind of names that they always called Bush. But they were allowed to call him the most disgusting names in the world, the most outrageous. And I'm talking about the people who are the highest officers of the government. People like Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid called him worthless, stupid, an idiot. They called him disgusting names. Did you ever hear the people on the right call Obama those type of names? They talk about the
No.
So if you call people filthy names, it's because you're discussing the issue. But when you discuss an issue, you're a racist.
Well, I think Glenn Beck was taught a lesson, because Glenn Beck said that he felt that Barack Obama might be a racist, and for calling Obama a racist, people said Glenn Beck was a racist.
Right.
So it was a new definition of racism.
A new definition of racism. You become a racist if you criticize Barack Obama in any direction in any way. And the fact of the matter is, Barack Obama is a racist. He proved he's a racist. You have to be a racist. If you call a person a racist whose only blemish to his character is that he happens to be white, and therefore he becomes a racist, then aren't you the racist while you're calling somebody else the racist? If you do this to a black person, you're a criminal. But if you do it to a white person, the white person becomes the racist, when all you're doing is expressing your own racism. And when you call Donald Trump a racist without any proof of any kind, without being able to identify any reason, just because you feel like calling him a racist. What could be more racist than that?
Well, I don't know if you remember the journalist incident where a bunch of high-level news executives were discussing on a bulletin board on the Internet that the Jeremiah Wright story was really hurting Barack Obama back during the election. So they discussed randomly picking a high-level Republican and leveling a false charge of racism. So it is very much one of their tactics to just whip out the race card.
Just because you're white, you're a racist. That's enough reason. But you're not to call them a racist for saying it. You remain a racist because they're accusing you of it. And this is the only situation in the world where you have to have no proof. You have to have no proof. All you know is that the person is white. You can't say, you can't identify anything he did that's racist. You don't have to identify. This is taking racism to the biggest extreme. This is worse than the white people attacking the blacks in the South 50 years ago. 50 years ago, they were attacking the blacks in the South who did nothing wrong, but they were attacking them just because they're black. Now it's not as violent, but they're doing the same kind of a thing. The only difference is that people are so nauseous from hearing it and so sick and tired of that kind of an accusation. It sounds so preposterous now that nobody even listens to it anymore, and I don't think it has any effect. The proof is that it has no effect is look how big the Tea Party and the Republicans won the whole the congressional elections in November. If that had any impact, the right, the Republicans and the Tea Party would never have had this incomparable victory that was the biggest congressional victory in 65 years. So obviously, the people are nauseous from hearing it and don't believe a word of it anymore. They know that they're they know it's just a desperate attempt to make a fool out of themselves.
I was told over 32 years ago when I was taking my lifeguard lessons from a lifeguard instructor, he said, Mark, if you blow your whistle every couple of seconds, just like the little boy who cries wolf, after a while, nobody's going to listen to you. And I think that's what's happened with the racism charge.
Not only that, it's desperately hard to claim racism when your black boy is the president. They're claiming you can't get ahead in this country because you're black. You can't make a living because you're black. Everything is against you because you're black. And here is a black guy who has accomplished nothing in his life. He became the president of the United States against the war hero who's been in the Senate for 30 years and considered one of the best senators of the last five generations. And he was a guy who literally accomplished nothing. Imagine if two people went for a job to run a furniture company. One is in the furniture business 30 years and created the most brilliant furniture history of any furniture man in the history of the country. And then a guy comes in who never saw furniture, never heard of furniture. He was in a building where they talked about furniture, but he's not his subject. He knows nothing about it. He never was involved in it. All he knows is that he heard about it and he wants to head the company now. You think that's how much sense this whole thing made? This is the guy who's supposed to be suffering from a terrible drawback because he's black. The only advantage he had is because he is black. If a short white guy came in and said he wants to run against McCain, and what did you do so far? So far, nothing but I want to beat this guy in an election. Why? Because I'm not busy. What else did you do? What else did you accomplish? Nothing. All I know is I'm not working right now, and I'm looking for a job. What's your claim to fame? Nothing. I happen to be short and white, and I'm suffering from discrimination. So I should be the president of the company. The excuse for being president is that you're suffering from discrimination. Therefore, you should be president. That's exactly how he became president. The white people are so desperate to prove that they can vote for a black person, that they voted for a black person who accomplished nothing, and they basically voted for him just to clear their conscience to prove to themselves that since they're always accused of being prejudiced, look, this is my badge to prove I'm not president. I'm voting for a guy who doesn't belong, who probably has the level of experience who shouldn't even be qualified to be a school teacher.
Well, you know, are you saying that voting present 160 times in the Illinois State Senate and then running for president the entire time he was in the U.S. Senate didn't prepare him for being president?
That's exactly what I'm trying to say. Look how many times they called me a racist. For 20 years they're calling me a racist already. Every time I say hello out loud, there's a black person in the neighborhood, I'm called a racist because they're saying I was basically attacking black people. I talked a little too loud in a black neighborhood. I could already be condemned as a racist.
I think this is just a tool they're using in desperation. Like you said, one of their other tools is to call people stupid. Sarah Palin is stupid. George W. Bush is stupid. Dan Quayle is stupid. Everybody on the right, everybody who's a conservative, is stupid, especially Sarah Palin.
Do you know that I'm an old Jew, so I could tell you because I personally remember it. I'm ashamed to admit that I actually remember it, that they were calling Ronald Reagan stupid the whole time that he was running against Carter. He was called
an idiot.
He was called an idiot and a moron every day.
Yeah, he was just a dumbass.
They were trying to make it. They were trying to make him into a laughable commodity. That it's preposterous for him to think of himself as a man who should be a president. They want to. They made it sound like he was a clown who doesn't belong in the building, and he came in here trying to run for president. He should be the janitor. They made it sound like they should give him a broom and let him sweep up.
You know, one of the things, you know what I like about you, Jackie, you don't hold back. Now, one of the things that has bothered me is that if someone on the right criticizes Obama's policies, we're racist, but they ignore racism from the left all the time. And I'm going to show you, even though I'm only 48 or about to be 48, I can reach back into time. I remember when I was in college, Mike Wallace was discussing home improvement loan contracts. He thought the microphones were off. And he said, Mike Wallace of 60 Minutes said that these contracts were a little difficult to understand if you're reading them over the watermelon or over the tacos. But he's a liberal, so his career survived. Now, just a few months ago, I guess over a year ago now, his partner at 60 Minutes, Dan Rather, said that Barack Obama was such a bad salesman when it came to his policies that he couldn't sell watermelons on the side of the road if he had the state troopers flagging down the traffic for him. And then, of course, Joe Biden said that Barack Obama was America's first clean, good-looking, articulate black man. And Harry Reid said that Obama was a light-skinned Negro who didn't have a black accent unless he wanted one.
Right.
There are leftists out there saying racist things all the time.
But they're always excused for it. They're always excused for it because they always make the assumption that if he's on the left, whatever he said, he couldn't have meant it that way. They start reinterpreting it for him. They give him new interpretations of things the guy never knew he said, and they give it a whole new attitude and a whole new English language. They rewrite the language for him and say this is not what it meant. It's not what he said, and it doesn't count. If a white guy just shows up, he's a racist. If a liberal says out racist remarks, it can't be from racism. It's because it comes from love. It was a joke. It wasn't meant. It wasn't said. It wasn't heard. He didn't know he said it. He didn't know it came out. They'll always find a way to excuse it because automatically, if you're a leftist, it's impossible for you to be a racist.
Apparently so. Now, you said, given your time restraints, we've only got about 3 minutes left. I want to help you move some products. Tell me about this new area that you're diving into with your wife, and that you're making these independent films.
We're making new movies now. We just made a movie called the Jackie Goldberg Private Dick. It's all a comedy detective picture about a hotel detective and all the shenanigans that go on in a hotel, and how he's running back and forth, chasing different problems and situations among different people and different characters in a hotel. It's meant to be a comedy. I hope it works out that way. So, you know, everybody who makes a movie thinks he just made the greatest movie of all time. I hear that every day. And then when the picture comes out and stinks, the guy tells you why. It's everybody else's fault. And he had it right, but well, it's an amazing thing. When a picture comes out a hit, all you see is love. When it comes out of Turkey, 18 enemies are made within an hour, and people who are crazy about each other for 30 years are finished for the rest of their lives because they can't stop blaming each other. What's that? There's an old saying that a party has 1,000 friends, but a failure creates a million enemies, something to that effect.
I'll have to look that one up.
Right. But that's how it works on every movie.
Well, you know, as I said, I do volunteer work for the Tea Party. I'd also like to volunteer to be in whatever your next movie is as an extra. If you need somebody to be a janitor or a bellboy or a cook or whatever.
Well, that's very sweet of you to offer your services. I'll be very happy when I hear somebody's ready to work for nothing. I got a job for him in a second.
Fantastic.
I'll have no trouble getting you a job for that price. I appreciate the offer. I appreciate the offer. You don't ask for money. We could always be very good friends, and I'll have plenty of work for you.
Fantastic. Just for the opportunity to work with the great Jackie Mason, I would work for free just to be a background person in one of your independent films.
Well, that's a very, very sweet thing of you to say. God bless you, my friend, and I enjoyed talking to you. It's hard to believe you made sense a few times. that's enough for me. It was seriously, I enjoyed kibitzing with you, my friend, and I'll be glad to talk to you anytime.
Fantastic. We'll have you back on again soon.
Thank you. Thank you.
Take care of yourself. You too. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Tea Party Power Hour with Mark Galar, a production of the Conservative Broadcasting Network.